Man, I feel like you have that intro and then this is what you have on stage in front of you, so I apologize for that. Hey, my name's Kit Wagner and I'm the lead pastor here. I'm super glad that you guys are with us this morning. We are getting to the cross. We're working our way up to Easter. And I was thinking about this because I have challenged you all to invite somebody to come to Easter with you. And I was thinking about a time when I had a pastor challenge me to bring somebody to Easter with me. And so I had brought this buddy with me. And if you've ever invited somebody to church, you're so nervous for them. You're right. You're worried. You're like, oh, please let the pastor not have a stinker of a sermon this morning, right? You're hoping that there's no stinkers out there. You're hoping that the worship is going to be really good, right? Wasn't our worship good this morning, huh? Yeah. Man, if you don't know it, Mike and his team, Dean and his team, Dean's team is the production team. There are a ton of people who get here at like 7:30 in the morning to get ready for you guys to be here for worship. That's incredible. You should find them and thank them later. So you're worried about that. You're worried about the everything just being perfect. And so I'll never forget, I invited this buddy of mine. He wasn't a Christian. And we're sitting next to each other for the whole service. And I'm just like a mess inside. I'm nervous for him. I'm hoping that he'll get it because I've been praying for this guy for a long time. I've been praying that he'll accept Jesus. And I'm hoping this is the moment. This is the time when he's going to give his life to Jesus. Everybody will start crying. It'll be amazing. So we're sitting there, and the worship goes off, and the worship goes off without a hitch. It's really good stuff. And then the sermon, the preacher gets up, and he starts preaching, and he's got a cross, and he's talking about the blood of Jesus and Jesus' death on the cross and how just all the gruesome details of it. He even had, have you ever seen a cat of nine tails? Do you know what this is? It's a whip, and it's what the Romans used to scourge people. They said that if you whipped somebody 40 times with it, it would kill them. And so they would whip their prisoners 40 minus one. So they would whip them 39 times with it, just to the brink of death with this. And this was the whip, the kind of whip that they used on Jesus. And he shows us one, and it's got this kind of big rustic handle, and it's got these leather straps coming out of it, nine straps. And in the straps, they would weave broken glass and bones and rocks so that when they would whip a person, it would wrap around their back, and all those things would dig into their back, and they would yank it out, and it would rip the flesh off your back. He's telling us all this gory, gruesome detail. And I'm telling you, as a Christian, I'm listening to it, and I'm going, this is so powerful. This is so good. And I'm praying for my buddy. Like, all the nerves start to melt away. I'm like, oh, this was it. This was the one, Jesus. He gets to hear what your sacrifice was like, how incredible it was. And I'm just pumped about it. And I'll never forget, we leave, and we're exiting. We're on our way out to the car, and we're talking, and we get in the car because we'd ridden together, and we get in the car, and I say to him, I said, what did you think of church tonight? Like today, what did you think of it? How was it? And he turns to me, and he goes, oh, man, it was weird. That wasn't the answer I was expecting, right? I didn't expect weird from him, and I said, weird, what do you mean? And he said, it was weird. What's with all the blood and the gore and all of that stuff? And I thought about it. I thought, man, I had never put myself in the position of a non-Christian looking in at Christianity. Have you ever done that? Have you ever thought what it would be like for them to look in from the outside? We sing songs like Nothing But the Blood, right? Now, that's weird, isn't it? Like, imagine being like, just nothing but the blood. All I want is the blood, right? You'd be like, you are a weirdo, right? Or we'll sing a song that says, like, there's power in the blood, like we're vampires or something, you know, like, I want to suck your blood, right? Like, we'll talk about all kinds of things. There's all these phrases and covered in the blood. If somebody ever says to you that they're covered in the blood, your first response, if you're a non-Christian, is like, you need medical attention right now, right? Like, if you really take yourself outside of Christianity for a moment, it is a weird thing, our obsession with blood. You know what you just did with communion. Like Mike just had you do this. You know what you were drinking represents Jesus' blood. You were drinking representation of blood. You were eating that bread represents his body, broken. It was not meant for you to just eat it and be like, a little gross-tasting wafer. It was meant for you to think about his body and for you to devour his body. I'm telling you, it is weird. So I started thinking about this question. I started thinking, so what's with the blood? Have you ever thought about it?
Have you ever really taken the time to slow down and think, why is Christianity so obsessed with blood? Because here's what I think. I have met really good, God-loving Christians who can't really explain why blood matters. They know it matters. They talk about it mattering. They'll say, oh, I'm covered in the blood of Jesus. But they don't know. They just know that it does matter. They don't know why it matters. And so I want to today, if I can, take you through a journey. It's going to be, I'm just going to tell you up front, it is going to be kind of theology for dummies. Not because you guys are dummies, but because I'm a dummy, all right? And so it's going to feel deep, but I'm hoping that it stays at a level that everybody can identify with, because the reality is I can't go to those levels that are like way over people's heads, because I'm just not that smart. So we're going to take this journey, and we're going to talk about two different things. We're going to talk about the problem, like why there was a problem that needed solved with blood, which seems like a weird thing. And then we're going to talk about what the actual solution is, why the blood actually matters for solving the problem. Does that make sense? And then at the very end, we're going to go to a passage that's probably familiar to a lot of you in the book of Romans that Paul wrote, and we're going to sum it all up, and we're going to kind of bring it all together. Everybody good with that? Yes, Kent. Yeah, I love it. You guys are good. You're getting it. Yes, Kent. That's all I need from you. All right, so here's where we're going to start. We're going to go 1,400 years before Jesus is on the scene. Jesus was on the scene 2,000 years ago. So put this in your mind. You were 3,400 years ago. We are in the time of the pharaohs. Egypt is blossoming and blooming, and it's doing well. And we're in this period of time where there's a guy that comes onto the scene named Moses. And you may have heard of him. Maybe you've seen his TV show, The Prince of Egypt. You ever seen that one? This is the guy who goes, and there's a burning bush, and the burning bush, God appears to him in it and tells him that he's to go set God's people free. Moses goes to Pharaoh and he says, let my people go. And there's these 10 plagues that come. And finally, Pharaoh lets Moses bring the people out, and they leave, and they go from being slaves to free people under God. And there is this special moment that's happening that you may not have realized, that for hundreds and hundreds of years, God has been relatively silent with his people. He hasn't really spoken much since Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now all of a sudden he's speaking to this guy named Moses. And things are starting to happen, and God is moving in this peculiar, spectacular way. And so Moses, having this relationship with God where he's actually speaking to him and he's having this relationship with him, Moses does something kind of crazy, a little bit bold, a little bit brash. He says, God, I want to see your glory. Now, when you want to see the glory of God, this means I want to be in the fullness of your presence, nothing masking it, nothing keeping me separated from you. And so Moses asks God about this, and God says to Moses, he says, okay, I will let you be in my glory. I'll let you see my glory. But God gives this stipulation. This is what he says. He says to him, I'll do that, but I can't let you see my face, because if I let you see my face, you will not live. Make sense to you? Some of you know what this is like. You wear a mask into Walmart and you see somebody and you're like, I think I know that person, but I don't know them because you can't see their face, right? We all live in this world right now. But what God does, he doesn't put on a mask. He does this. He says, Moses, I'll let you see, but I can't let you see my face, because no one, not just Moses, but no one, is what God says, can see his face and live. So God takes Moses and he puts him inside of this cave in a cliff. And God, this is God's solution to it. He puts his hand over the cave, and he passes by. And as he passes by, he takes his hand off, and he allows Moses to see his backside. It's one of the comedy things, I think, from God. Like, if you've ever wondered if God has a sense of humor, I totally think he does, because that's just funny, man. Like, you can't see my face, but I'll let you see the backside. And so this is what God lets Moses see. And it's such a powerful moment for Moses' life, just seeing the backside of God. That when Moses comes off of the mountain, do you know what Moses happens to Moses? He is transformed by it. His face glows. Like, people are like, did you get hit by some radiation? Or, you know, Moses, they didn't really know about radiation, so I don't think anybody said that. But he comes off the mountain and his face is glowing. And so much so that the people complain because they can't look at Moses' face. It's so brilliant. And they make him wear a veil over his face. Paul talks about this in the book of Corinthians. They make him wear a veil over his face because you can't be in God's presence. You can't be in God's presence and not be changed by it. And not only can you not be in God's presence and not be changed by it, but if you were to experience the fullness of God's presence in your sinful state, it would literally destroy you. Moses could not be in his full presence, see him face to face like that. Why? This is not the only time. Actually, in Isaiah 6, he sees God. He has this vision of God, and he's in the God is in the temple, and just the train of God's robe, just kind of the leftover parts of it, fill the temple. It shakes the temple so much so that even the doorposts, if anybody's ever been to California during an earthquake, one of the safest places to be during an earthquake is in the underneath the doorposts. But the doorposts are even shaking. And Isaiah, in this moment, he doesn't have a physical fear for his body. What Isaiah's fear is that he's not holy enough to be in the presence of God. He gets it. He's scared for his life because he knows that an unholy thing cannot exist in the presence of a truly holy thing. It just can't. Did you hear that? What is unholy cannot exist in the presence of the holy. I've heard, I want to tell you, I've heard my whole life preachers say, they'll say this, God can't be in the presence of sin. Usually it's like a Southern Baptist preacher, and they're like, God cannot be in the presence of sin. And I'm not good, like, man, I wish I was good at that, but I don't have that voice. Mine's more like, hey, God can't be in the presence of sin. But my whole life I've heard people say this. Have you ever heard somebody say this? God can't be in the presence of sin. And I've always thought, what kind of a weak God do you serve? I can be in the presence of sin. Can't you? You ever been around a sinner? Like lots of them? What kind of a weak God do you serve that he can't, he's so weak, he can't be in the presence of sin? See, I think the real truth is this. I think the real truth is that sin can't be in the presence of God. You cannot. So the reason Moses can't look God face to face is because Moses, as righteous as he was, still was a sinful man. He still struggled with lust. He struggled with anger. He struggled with all kinds of like terrible thoughts. Moses had killed a man at one point. Just all kinds of stuff. And the reality is a sin cannot exist in the presence of God no more than water could exist on the surface of the sun. Right? Like, not going to happen. Water can't exist. You guys hear that? Whoa. That's God speaking to you right now, if you didn't know. Christy, I think we have a bass issue somewhere. God, like just like water can't exist on the surface of the sun, neither can sin exist in the presence of God. Does this make sense to you? This is the problem for us. So let's keep going on this logical idea and some of this theology. So what's the problem? How does this have anything to do with blood? How does it have anything to do with blood? And this is what I think the problem is. The problem is that you and I are utterly sinful in our human state, right? We are utterly sinful in our human state. I'm not just sinful. I'm not just sinful, but it is literally a part of my nature. You know this if you've ever had kids because you've seen their sinful nature. Like the moment they can talk, what's like one of their first words? Mine, right? Like everything mine and all they care about is me, me, me. And you spend the rest, you don't have to teach your kids to sin. They just do it naturally, right? You have to teach them not to sin. You have to teach them how not to do bad things, how not to be selfish, all those kinds of things. I am not just sinful, but it is a part of my nature. So here's my next question for you. But why is this a problem? Because you and I believe in a God who can do everything, right? Who is powerful beyond all imagination. He's omni everything, omnipresent, all of these omnis, he's omni. Why doesn't God just forgive me when I ask him? If he can do anything he wants, he's all powerful, why can't I just ask him to forgive me? No blood necessary, and bada boom, bada bing, I'm forgiven, right? Like he's from New York or something. I don't know why I put that in there, but bada boom, bada bing, baby, you know, you're forgiven, you know what I mean? Why? Have you ever wondered that? This is the question so many people have. If God's loving, why doesn't he just forgive people? Why does he hold them to this standard? So I want to take you on a quick another little side journey. I know this is a lot of little journeys we're going to go on, but I want to take you through another idea. We're going to explore this concept of why he can't just do that. And we're going to explore it through a story from my life. Now, I'm going to tell you something horrible about myself, all right? So I need everybody in here to raise your right hand, put your hand, your left hand over your heart. All right, everybody do this real quick. Say, I do hereby solemnly swear to not judge you, Kent, all right? All right, thank you. You guys didn't do it, so I'm pretty sure half of you are judging me. Let me tell you this story, okay? Now, I actually am going to tell you a story from when I was a teenager because I'm too ashamed to tell you anything from my recent past, but guarantee you this, I'm a man who still struggles with sin. And so I know I'm a pastor. Some people hold pastors up on a high pedestal. I am really just another guy like you. I just happen to get up and get the privilege and honor of studying God's word and bringing it to you. But I sit out there with you during these sermons. And so as I do this, I'm telling you the story from my teenage years, but I'm doing that intentionally because it's like, hopefully you'll be less judgy with me, all right? So here's the story. I'm in middle school, and I thought I was a pretty funny person, and I also wanted to be really popular. I wanted people to like me. Does anybody identify with that from middle school? Anybody remember those days? Good. All right. So I'm not alone. I really wanted people to like me, and I thought I was funny. And so there was this kid that I went to school with who was kind of mentally handicapped, and I would make fun of him mercilessly. Like I literally made up songs about him. I would see him walking through, and I would start singing the song, and everybody would die laughing. And I rose through the ranks of popularity. People loved me. They thought I was funny, partially, I think, because nobody wanted me making fun of them, right? But I did it all at his expense. I mean, I just made fun of him and made fun of him, and I was merciless about it. Every time I saw him, I would whisper and make jokes behind his back, and I'm sure that he heard me. You want to judge me, right? You know what that's like to see that. Some of you were that kid. Some of you are that kid. And I'm just being blatantly honest. I was a complete and utter jerk to this kid. So here's the issue with, why can't I just say, God, will you forgive me for that? And he just magically forgives me. Here's the issue. Most of us want a loving God. Would you agree with that? We want a loving God, one that will forgive us of our past failures. So can say to him, will you forgive me for X, Y, and Z, for me just being terrible to this kid and ruining his life? Will you forgive me for that? But let me ask you this question too. Don't you also want a God that's just? Do you know what I mean by that? A God who will look at Kent and go, Kent, he cried himself to sleep every night because of you. Kent, he was lonely and had no friends in school because of you. You took advantage of one of the weakest people that there was at your school for your own social rank. Don't you want God to take his wrath out on me for that? His justice out? Don't you want a God who is just in that moment? And this is just a kid sin, right? This isn't even adult level stuff. This isn't, some of you have had a business where you had your business and it was thriving and it was going good, and you found out that one of your employees had been embezzling from you, and you found out that your business was about to tank and you had nothing left, and you don't even know what to do with that. Like, it's been years and there's still this anger because your family has suffered, you have struggled, you have fought to keep your business alive ever since, customers stopped trusting you, and you are dying on the inside because of somebody's sin. Don't you want justice for that? Some of you have had a spouse that has hurt you in a deeper way than you even care to broach in this moment. You'd prefer to just keep that part of you hidden and tranquilized and not have to deal with it. And me even bringing it up, you're like, nope, don't think about it. Don't go there. You can't sleep at night because of it. Don't you want a God that's just? Not just a God that goes, it's okay that you did that. You're forgiven. Does that seem okay to you? Some of you have had, I could go on, right? Parents who've hurt you. There's a million different ways that we, in our dysfunction of sin, hurt and paralyze and destroy others. See, I think this is, have you ever watched a movie? You ever watched a movie and there's a really bad guy in the movie? Like really bad? Like, I mean, like they killed a dog bad, right? Like, that's like the worst thing you can do in a movie is kill a dog for some reason. You can kill a bunch of people, but the moment you kill a dog, it's on, right? When that happens, don't you want the bad guy to get justice? This is why you can be okay with him killing the bad guy in movies. You don't care. You're like, yeah, I'm glad he got what was coming to him, right? Because deep down, deep seated inside of you, you have this God-built need for justice inside of you. Even if you didn't know it. Even if you're somebody who says, I think love is the most important thing, and you're a love person, and you're kind of a hippie with, love is all we need. There's a place inside of you that if things go wrong enough, you want justice. See, I think what all of us are really wanting, if we're really honest with ourselves, what we really want is a God who will forgive me for doing wrong things, but deliver justice to everyone else. Does that make sense to you? I want him to forgive me. I want what I did to that kid to just be okay. And no, I don't have to pay for it. I don't have to do anything. But will you make him pay? And will you make her pay, God? Because she hurt me terribly. God, what about him and her and him and her? That's what we really want. And the problem is it is a conundrum for God. Because you need to know this. God really does want you. He really does want you, but the problem is God has to figure out a way to deal justly with your sin. Make sense to you? He cannot just forgive you because then he's not loving. If he doesn't figure it out, he doesn't just deliver justice, but he is ultimately being unloving. If he doesn't deliver justice, he's ultimately being unloving because he's unloving to the object of your sinful actions. If God just forgives me, he seems loving towards me, but unloving to that kid that I made fun of. Does this make sense to you? Is this making sense? Yeah? All right. I know it's deep. I know it's heavy stuff. You're like, man, it's like 11:39. Like, come on, man. All right. So what does God do in this moment? What does he do? Here's what I think he has to do. When the object of his love, us, is unable to exist in his presence, this is what he had to do. Like, you know the story of Adam and Eve, right? Now, whether you believe it or not, it's a different story, but you know the story. I personally believe that this was a real interaction that happened. And what happened is Adam and Eve sin. And before this, Adam and Eve walk fully in the presence of God. But when they sin, God puts something into action. He allows death to enter the world on the back of sin. Sin ends up equaling death. Did you know this? This is why when somebody dies in your world, you feel very unnatural about it. Have you ever felt that way? Somebody died and it just felt unnatural. You were like, they weren't supposed to die. They were taken too soon. We'll say all those kinds of things. Do you know why you feel that? Because humans weren't created to die. We are created to live forever in union with God. They walked in the garden with him. So God, what have you been up to today? Created any worlds or anything, right? Like, that's what we were supposed to be like. But instead, we sin, and so God has to bring death into the world. And I think in some ways, and this is going to sound weird at first, but I think in some ways, death was even a mercy that God gave us. Because sinfulness in humans is utterly sinful. Imagine if Adolf Hitler had been able to live for all of eternity. Imagine. Imagine if sinfulness could go all the way to its very end. There are some terrible people in history, but guess what? Every one of them, there is this mercy that it ends. There is a place where they will not live past a certain point, right? And so God introduces sin, ends up equaling death. Because of the sin, the just thing to do is for those people to die. That's why they can't be in his presence, because the moment you go into his presence, you forfeit everything because an unholy thing has just walked into holiness. And it's like water on the face of the sun. So what do you do if you're God? Because this is a big conundrum, eh? All of a sudden I'm Canadian, not Kentuckian. It's a big conundrum. What do? If you're God, I love these people. I want to be with them. What do? So the answer, I think the solution to all this, the answer was in an ancient word. Are you ready for this? The word is atonement. Atonement in the Hebrew is actually the idea of covering something with pitch, kind of like a tar type substance. Noah, when he finished the ark, he covered the ark with pitch. The ark was a boat, right? You've seen it. It's in Kentucky, north of here. But he covers it with pitch. It would have been this black tar-like substance. Why? Because what tar does is it seals things up and it protects it and it repairs any problems inside of it, right? This is this beautiful picture. Atonement. You probably have actually heard of atonement. There's this Jewish people celebrate a holiday called Yom Kippur. This is the Jewish day of atonement. Now, they cannot perform the actual atonement rites because the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD. So they can't actually do it anymore, what they were supposed to do. But what God had called upon them to do was to take two goats. And there was a guy called the high priest, and they would bring the goat on the Day of Atonement, the first goat, and the priest would walk up to it, and he would lay his hands on the head of the goat. And he would pray, and he would cast all of the sins of the people, of the nation of Israel, on this goat. He'd say things like, God, we have been a rebellious people. We haven't obeyed your law. We haven't followed you. We haven't done what we were supposed to do. We've been given over to angry, murderous thoughts and lustful thoughts. And he would just walk through sins and he would lay them on the head of the goat. And then they would take the goat and they would send it out into the desert to die. This is where the idea of a scapegoat comes from. You ever heard of a scapegoat? It comes from this ceremony. They would send it out into the desert to die. They'd bring the second goat and they would take it and they would slit its throat. It was very gruesome. They slit its goat throat, and they would drain all of the blood out of the animal. They would collect and capture all the blood, and then the high priest would take that blood into the temple. And in the temple, the first room was called the holy place, and all priests could go into the holy place, but there was a place past there called the Holy of Holies, and inside of it was the Ark of the Covenant. If you open it, your face will melt off, all right? Now, that's actually probably not true. That's just from Indiana Jones, and I thought of it, and it's funny to me. But you go into the holy place, Holy of Holies. I'm a nerd, I'm sorry. And the Ark of the Covenant is in there, and the high priest would take this blood in with him, and he would start to sprinkle blood all over the ark. And he would sprinkle blood all over the room. And do you know what he was doing? He was making atonement for the nation of Israel. He was letting the blood of this animal be the pitch that repaired the relationship between God and his people. Does this make sense to you? It's a beautiful picture. It's a little gory. It's bloody. I get it. But it is a beautiful picture of God repairing his relationship with the people through the death of one thing, taking the place of the other thing. Listen to why the blood matters. This is what God says specifically in Leviticus 17 when he's talking about blood. In Leviticus 17:11, he says this, "For the life of a creature is in the blood." We actually scientifically now know that God was right about this, right? That the literal life of you is in your blood. It carries oxygen to you. It carries nutrients to your whole body. It takes care of all kinds of stuff. And if I remove the blood from your body, what will happen to you? You will die. Thank you, right? The life of a creature is in its blood. And I have given it to you for the atonement, for the making right between you and God. He's given the blood of this animal to you to atone for yourselves on the altar. It is the blood that makes atonement for one's life. Did you hear that? Did you hear it? That the blood of the animal was given as a sacrifice and a substitution for the life of the person. Remember, sin equals death. Something has to die. And so God, in his mercy and his grace, gave them these animals that could die in their place. It is literally life for life. The blood satisfied the need for justice. So I want to take this whole sermon and wrap it up with one scripture. You guys good with that? Some of you are like, yeah, let's hit the finish line. Yeah, like, whoo, that's a lot of thinking you're making me do today, all right? Here we go. First of all, this is what Hebrews says about those sacrifices, all right? Hebrews 10:3-4, this is in the New Testament. He's looking back on these sacrifices, and he says, but those sacrifices, they were an annual reminder, what? Not of forgiveness, but of sins. Every year they were coming together, and they were basically reminding each other, hey, you're a sinner. Hey, you mess up. Hey, you have a lot of dysfunction in your life. Hey, you are sinful. Why? Because it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. They can't really do it because you're trying to substitute an animal. You're trying to substitute an animal for a human's life. So listen to what Paul says in Romans 3:23-26. He says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Remember what we talked about with Moses? He couldn't see God's full glory. Paul is referencing back. You have all sinned. We are all in the same boat. We have all messed up. None of you are good enough to be in the presence of God. But what does he say about this? This is why it's a shame when people don't read on. Like, if you just heard that verse and you didn't read the rest of it, you've missed out. Because he says this, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. He's saying that your path to freedom came through Jesus. And how did it come? Listen, verse 25, God presented Christ as a sacrifice of, say it with me, atonement. God presented Christ. Remember, bring in the goats. One sends out in the desert. The other one becomes the sacrifice of atonement. You kill it. You shed its blood for the nation. He's saying that when Jesus came, he came as this replacement, his blood for your blood. He became the atonement for your sin, for all of your unrighteousness, for all of my unrighteousness, for that moment where I was making fun of that kid. He took all of that upon himself. This is why he had to die. What does he say? Listen, through the shedding of his blood, to be received by faith. How do you receive that gift? You receive it by faith. By believing in it, trusting that it actually happened. He did this to demonstrate his righteousness, because in his forbearance, you know what forbearance means? It means bearing with something, bearing like through it. You're kind of pushing through the pain and through, you're enduring that moment to get to the payoff, right? So God, in his forbearance, what did he do in his forbearance? What was this painful thing that he's enduring through? He left the sins committed beforehand unpunished. Have you ever wondered why God allows evil and wicked in the world? Because if God is going to deal with all of the sinfulness of mankind, if he was going to deal with Kent in that moment where he was making fun of that kid, do you know what God would have to do in order to be just? He would have to deal with all of the sin in the world. And he would have to destroy it. Do you get it? God isn't taking care of wickedness because God is just lazy and he doesn't care. He's doing it because he loves and he wants every person to repent. He wants every person to come back. And so he endures it and he bears with it, hoping that they'll come to Jesus and that Jesus can become the sacrifice of atonement and that his blood can take the punishment of their blood and come upon him so that he can bring them into right standing with him. And so listen to this. He did that. He did it. Verse 26. He did it to demonstrate his righteousness at the present time. I love this. So as to be just. Remember? There's a need for that sin to be paid for. He did it this way so that he could be both just and what? And the one who justifies us. Justifying us, meaning bringing us into the presence of God for those who have faith in Jesus. Listen, Christians talk about blood because without it, we're stuck. That's why we talk about blood. We talk about it because without it, we are absolutely, eternally stuck. We're stuck because our sin has to be paid for. And the system that God set up was that a death could take that place. And so what did he do? This was such an elegant solution. He set up the system of animals to kind of as a precursor so we'd understand it, so that when he came into the world, and he climbed up onto a cross and died, like the nails shoved through his hands and the splinters on his back that has been ravaged by a whip, so that his body broken and bruised, so that when thorns had shoved down on his head, that he could take your sin and my sin and it could be dealt with justly. And he could look at that kid that I made fun of and go, that what Kent did was paid for. Oh, was it paid for? He paid it all. Right? We sang about it. Jesus paid it all. Did you understand what you were singing? But he also brought us into relationship with him. And we believe this because we were stuck without him. Listen, in this way, God is both just. He has ensured that there is a price to be paid for sin. He also justifies by repairing our ability to be in his presence and restoring us from the curse of the law. And this is why blood matters so much to us. It matters so much to us because it was the power of God to repair our relationship with him. I wish I had known that to tell my friend years ago. To be able to say, this is why it matters so much. I actually, when I was a youth pastor, because of that moment, when I was a youth pastor, I would ask my kids in my youth group all the time, I'd say, why does a guy dying on a cross 2,000 years ago do anything for you? How does that even do anything for you? And they would struggle and they would not know. But I asked, it was a tough, tough question. First reason I asked it is because teenagers always think they're right. And you know, I just wanted to like show them there's some hard stuff out there. But secondly, I asked them because they were going to go to college and they were going to get whacked over and over again. And they needed to have something solid to stand on. You know why it matters? Because just as sin entered through one man, Adam, so salvation entered through another. The restoration of your soul entered through Jesus, dying on the cross, shedding his blood for you. His blood matters more than anything in your life. And guess what? It matters because it's a free gift. This is why blood matters so very much to us, because it was the power of God to repair our relationships with him. It was the power for that. It's how you are brought back into relationship with him. This morning I was thinking about how many of us, like maybe for you, you haven't been to church for a long time, or maybe you've gone to church your whole life and you've never understood all of these different connections, like how all throughout the Bible there is this picture being painted that brings you to this point where you get to actually be free in God, relationship with God, because he was both just and justified. I don't know where you're at. Maybe you've never even heard this, and you're like my friend who went to church with me, and you're like, man, that's weird, but I kind of get it now. It's still weird to me. I don't know where you're at, but what I know is this. The blood can set you free. It can set you free from addiction. It can set you free from the bondage of sin in your life, where you struggle constantly and you feel all this guilt and shame, and you can leave it at the cross. You can drop it there because he already bore the pain of it. He already bore the suffering. Why would you carry it around any longer? He came to set you free. And when the sun sets you free, baby, you are free indeed. That's the truth. That's the truth. Yeah. So why? Why would you wait any longer? Don't you want him? Don't you need him? I want to pray, and then we're going to sing the song of invitation. We're actually going to sing Nothing But the Blood, because nothing but the blood. What can take away my sin? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. I want to pray, and I just want to ask you to bow your heads and close your eyes while I pray. And just pray along with me. Jesus, we need you right now. I thank you for your blood. I thank you for your sacrifice on the cross. I thank you that I was not worthy of it. But even in my most unworthy moment, you were looking at me and you were going, this is the reason, Kent. This is the reason I'm here. This is the reason I'm dying for you. Jesus, I pray for anybody out there this morning who is far away from you and doesn't have a relationship with you, whether it's online or it's in this room, God, that you would grab a hold of their heart this morning, that your spirit would move in them, that you would push them, they'd literally feel pushed out of their chair to move towards you, to feel the faith permeating their soul and their being as they walk into a relationship with you for the very first time and just say, I'm not worthy of you, God. Jesus, we need you and we love you, and I am overwhelmed with thankfulness for your death on the cross for me and for all my friends in here. Help us to live like it matters, Jesus. I just wanted to ask real quickly one question while your heads are bowed and your eyes are closed. How many of you realized that when you accepted Jesus, the depth of what you were accepting, like what we talked about today, the blood, the death, why it mattered so much? If you didn't really know that, what that was, would you just raise your hand while nobody's looking? Thank you. I appreciate you guys being honest with me. That's awesome. That doesn't mean that the blood doesn't cover you. Can I just say that? It means that now you know what you came into and how blessed you really are. I want to ask too, is there anybody in here today who, while everybody's eyes are closed and their heads are bowed, that you say, you know what, I think I want to explore this whole Jesus thing. Is there anybody in here that would raise their hand and say that I want to be free from my addictions. I want to find new life. Would you raise your hand? I see that. Hey, that's awesome. Praise God for you. That's awesome. Yeah. So listen, in a moment, we're going to sing this song, and you're welcome to come forward. We'd love to talk to you, those of you who raised your hands, and pray with you and help you start that journey. But if not, if you don't, I totally get not feeling comfortable. You can always contact one of us, come talk to us. Or like in the back of your chairs, there's a book that's a free book for you to take that will walk you through how to start a relationship with Jesus. If you're online, you can find it on our website online. But man, don't leave here with what God has done in your heart to move you into relationship with him and just walk away from it and go back to life as normal. It's not worth it. Don't leave and walk away the same. If you want to come forward and talk to somebody and pray, or just pray by yourself, this is your time to do it. We're going to sing the song, but I'd invite you all to stand and just worship your guts out to God who gave his life for you. You guys stand and sing with us.
What can wash away my sin? Nothing but the blood.